Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? We are back with day three of our holiday. You got a noun this time, Kata? We got a new one?
Shit.
You already did Jamboree. So you blew through them last time.
Yeah, shit.
That was your mistake right there. We're picking up from our list of 2020 games, the games of 2020, walking through the list. We are running late. Could you believe it? The last podcast we did was longer than intended. Whoops. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me, Kato.
Fett. Gaming Fett.
What?
Shindig.
Oh,
is that Shindig?
Okay, great.
Shindig, you're looking at this. Oh, wow. You're finding more words.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keita Jackson's here.
Hello, I'm also here.
Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And Rob Zachney.
Happy to be at this gaming debutante ball.
There it is.
Junk it.
Finally have arrived.
Junk it.
That's not right. That's not the same. That's not right.
It's under thesaurus for Jamboree.
At a certain point, maybe, you know what, you know, 6 hours in, you're like, yeah.
This,
you know,
feels this like a fucking junket. Yeah. Deep Rock Galactic came out of Early Access. That game's cool. We're in May now. That's all. We played that game during the save point this year. That was fun.
I'm trying to remember when I had COVID-19.
Not it's right out here, right?
Yeah, no, right around early, here. So I don't know how useful I will be at this part. I was mostly asleep.
Oh, right. Maybe you had it in April.
I thought you were like in April,
May and April don't really, I don't really remember them. I will be very honest.
Fair. Yeah.
Fair.
You know?
You know what? Absolutely fair.
Did anyone actually play John Wick Hex? Did anyone get it?
I played that. That was last year. That was a re-release.
Windows
last year. Yep. This is a re-release. Yes. Otherwise,
Deep Rock Galactic formally came out. Is that it? Is that real?
Yeah. We just talked about it. We just said we played it during save point and that it was good. Rob, are you okay?
Sorry, I'm distracted by Twitter mentions.
Rob's having a shindig.
Rob's having a shindig. I see. Okay, that makes
Super
sense.
Super Mega Baseball. I never got a chance to play that version of it. Three. But it keeps coming out. And you know what? We love that.
Good job.
They keep doing it.
Keep it moving. Those Mafia 2 remakes.
Hatsune Miku. Cool. Project D.
Wait, there's something
definitive.
Before the Mafia remix, there's one thing I do want to mention.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Golf with your friends.
Yeah.
That game is absolutely, it's like, I mean, it needed, if it came out a little bit deeper into quarantine when people, by the time people really realized they were not going to be leaving their homes meaningfully, I would have hit a lot harder.
We were still in that Animal Crossing period, of course.
Yeah.
If this had hit summer, maybe it would have blown up.
Yeah. It's a very, very fun golfing game where you're all playing these wacky mini golf levels, but literally, like, you are all playing with your friends all at the same time, and it's just chaos. It's so much fun.
That sounds fun. That sounds great. I love that.
Hold on. Okay, so I clicked on the Wikipedia entry for Golf with Your Friends. And I was just looking at it. I was like, I remember that game.
Uh-huh,
and I was looking at the references. We got the fourth reference. We got an article called Premature Evaluation, Golf with Friends by Rob Zachney, written February 22nd, 2016.
What?
Rob, what did you think of Golf with Friends? Let me see what your conclusion is. Golf with Friends isn't even a month old, and it's already a lot of fun. If you can put up with the noises of its rough edges.
It was extremely rough. Like, I will say that.
I mean, yeah, it was early access for a while, huh? Damn.
Yeah, it was
4 years.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very
funny.
That's
a long early access period.
That is a long early access period, to the point where
I didn't put together, like, that this was a game I played. Like, people were like, oh, it's so good. I was like, I've never seen this game in my life.
That's welcome to fucking game journalism. Yeah.
I definitely had seen people play this, like streamers or something, just play this randomly in a way where I didn't realize it was still in early access like a year or so ago. And then it came out. I was like, oh, shit. I guess that was not done. But now it is. Or, you know, 1.0, mm-hmm. whatever that really means anymore.
The big one for me this month, Umurangi Generation. I cannot say things about this game because it's... yeah. I can ask questions. Hmm.
So, hey, Patrick, what did you think about... Yeah.
Great.
Refer to a recent podcast. I mean, like, you only have to go back like a week and a half to... I haven't played the DLC yet. I'm going to do that soon. I know I wanted to give myself like 2 weeks before like I went back into like the form, you know, the mix on that game again. But now I feel like I've had enough distance that I'm anxious to see what they do. All I remember is I vaguely remember you, Kato, at one point being like, interesting things with the timeline, which now as someone invested in not the plot, but like the world building of Umurangi, I am curious to know what that what that means. Umurangi, it is one of the most unique experiences you will have this year, even if the game doesn't click for you. Like, it didn't click for me in the way it clicked for Austin and Kato, just mostly because mechanically it was just not my thing. But I you know, it is still worth poking around at that game for the sheerly for the world building.
What is
sheerly for if only to find out the premise and then go, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that part is just a joy.
What is your favorite Umurangi Generation level?
Which one? I think I mentioned it on that. It's the train. Like, okay. the train was my favorite. Yeah. Because and it was, you know, part of that was, one, I think it's really well designed, and two, it's because it focused in and got away some of the rough parts that I found in other levels where I felt myself scrambling. You move really slow in that game, and so it's like, oh, I don't know where this thing is. Guess I'm going to go poke around this other area and slowly trod over there. And like being in the train and having everything. And the first level is one of my favorites too, like where you just have this small little hangout area. There's a little bit of verticality to it. But there's like, I liked the areas that were dense, which is like, here is a small space in which figuring out even what you had to look for was a puzzle in and of itself, because you weren't, it's like, it's here. Like, it's fucking, like, whatever they're telling me to take a picture of, like, I know it's right in front of me and I can't find it. And figuring that out was fun. Actually, some of the joyous moments was when you would accidentally, I'd take a picture of, like, you know, I'd set it up for a shot of like one thing, and I'd get multiple objectives in a single shot unintentionally, and I'd be like, wait, like, which objective did I just get in that second photo or that first photo? And then figuring out exactly what you'd accidentally stumbled into, like accidentally taking a picture of like seven ducks or whatever.
I also think this game is good.
So it's not your number one then, because you said a definitive thing.
No, I mean, there's three games on here that I'm not going to talk about because I can't decide which one is going to be that high up in my list.
Gotcha.
I like that. Look at that. Yeah. That's good.
That's smart.
That's I'm probably doing similar hedging.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. All right. Well, maybe we can keep moving games. Then. We'll talk some more about Umurangi in another episode.
Yeah.
Just real quick, Crucible was a free-to-play multiplayer third-person shooter that released in May.
What?
Crucible?
The Crucible multiplayer mode in Destiny?
Did that already close?
The
Amazon game. It's done.
Would be discontinued in 1 month. So basically,
it's done.
Like a month ago.
Grand opening.
Grand closing.
Grand closing.
Is there a more bizarre studio than Amazon?
I think they're fascinating because it's an indication of like why large companies can't do small cool things. Like the scale of resources they've been able to bring to bear on Amazon Game Studio are not small, but by Amazon standards they are. And it just turns into a shambolic shit show because, like, there's no vision or real reason for this stuff to exist, nor are decisions, I think, being made by a company that understands how to, like, make decisions about how to make games and which games to make. So you end up with, like, just weird decisions that all feel like like the Firefall, like basically like the people, the sort of people who kept giving Firefall money, like got jobs at Amazon is how it ends up feeling.
Next year, the, you know, New World will release the game that early trailers looked extremely settler colonial, you know, MMO sim. I have heard that they have tried to change some of that stuff based on internal pushback against the way that game is framed. We will see.
How much can you really do? The name of the game is New World. What the fuck are you going to do at that point?
That's what I mean, like the framing itself is like there are probably things you can do on the margins, but you might be
Here's something you can do, not make this game.
Continuing down this list, Maneater, did anyone play the shark game?
I was going to say I felt like someone did. Didn't someone talk about it on a podcast once?
On an E3. I saw it at E3.
Oh, okay. That was the only time.
A year and a half ago. Wow. the last E3 we went to, I saw Maneater.
You could just say the last E3.
Goofy. The last E3. Yeah. Which is probably true.
Owned.
They needed to win before they just shut down the whole thing. I'm so powerful.
I'm looking through here and I'm not seeing much.
There's another big one in May that isn't on here though. Or at least big for us, kind of. Not really big, but Signs of the Sojourner was in May.
Oh shit, was it?
Yeah.
Or at least
I feel like. Let me double check. I'm like pretty sure it was.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Signs.
Do you want to talk about that game? Or can you? Or are you not sure?
Hey, Patrick, how did you feel?
Wait, are you placing multiple bets too?
Yeah.
Are you playing multiple bets, Austin, or are you settled?
I'm locked. I'm fucking locked.
I'm locked too. Okay. All right.
Austin and Patrick.
Yeah.
This is a strange stat because I like we quite literally just had this conversation about like my concluding thoughts on this game, and they sort of remain the same in that I think like Umurangi, it is one of the most, it'll end up on my list because it is one of the most unique experiences I've had playing a game in years. Like the interface is just, even if you don't like end up caring for it at all, like just seeing the way they translated communication to a card game is just so fucking cool.
It's fantastic. It's such clever design around a simple thing. You can so clearly see how it was like prototyped physically. And it's fun to just have a central mechanic that like cleverly communicates something about communication. So clearly, it's a great story. It's melancholy. I think the music is really good and slept on in that game. We've never brought it up, and it's really good. And the art is fantastic.
It was always a delight to meet a new character, even if like it was clear right from the go that like this was like kind of like, sorry, I don't have any of your shapes. Like we just can't talk to each other. I know that you want me to like be engaged in your cooking competition, and me player Patrick wants to be engaged in your cooking competition, but you were very far on the other side of the map, and I don't have this triangle or whatever. Like, it's just not, there's only a very small scenario where I'm going to get the right cards, and it's probably only going to let me get through one exchange positively before it all kind of falls apart. And it's just part of what I find remarkable about it and what lingers with me, despite like my playthrough not going particularly well in the back half. I'm sure like different playthroughs went different ways for different people with their decks. And that's the nature of these types of games, is just that I think, and this is normal, but like games have fallen into a trap of like, oh, this is just how dialogue works. This is just how communication works in a game. And what this game suggests is like, no, there are still like limitless possibilities of reimagining what it means to have a communicate in an interactive medium. We still dialogue. It's still using a lot of it's not like throwing all of that out, but just the mechanism of interaction is so fundamentally different that it changes the emotion and tenor of that interaction in a way that I hope like the legacy of a game like that is like, oh, like we, you know, dialogue wheels, like,
yep, there's other dialogue ways choices. To do.
It doesn't, it, there are other ways to do these things that we think are settled. And it doesn't mean that, like, you know, Cyberpunk or whatever needs to like have like cards to communicate his dialogue. I'm not saying that every game has to throw it out, but it is sort of suggestive that there's a lot more to explore here. And that makes me like, it's games like that that made me really excited about the, like the future of the medium is that, oh, games like Signs may not be played by a huge wide audience, but hopefully it's played by the right people. Mm-hmm. And then you see that stuff trickle into other games, which is like, oh, we can reimagine basic ideas of interaction that are more, that are just more interesting. Like it just, it is more interesting. Like it's in the same way that, you know, like playing a game like Cyberpunk where like the, you'll see this a lot of open world games where the dialogue you're picking is just like a rewritten version of the dialogue that plays out just so that the player isn't like reading and then the hearing same thing.
Yeah.
And it's sort of goofy, but like, I understand what, where you arrive at that. And what was interesting about Sojourner was, you know, you didn't know what the, you were like gesturing at what the dialogue was going to be, but you didn't know it was actually going to play out. So it was almost like you were doing tone pieces as you were having those interactions. And yeah, again, I know every time I talk about it, I like forget more about the second half and then reminisce more about the first half. Yeah. And then like, I feel it in my heart, like going higher on my list.
Yeah. It's a good game. I can hear you talking yourself into it right now. You were working yourself.
Yeah. Like it's not going to get to number one. Like it's settled. Like it's number one with a bullet. Like it's, we're good. But like, it's a game, like I see it creeping itself into my top five. The more I think about it.
Good game. I've a quick, small one. I'm just going to get three small ones out of the way. Does that make sense? There's three ones. I think I'm the only one who touched these. Pirates Outlaws, another Slay the Spire style roguelike card game I played in May. That game was pretty good. That's it. I didn't stick with it. So I don't have a lot of positive things to say about it, but like it should be on your radar if that's the type of thing that you're into. Then I have two tactics games, one of which came out in May that's not on the May in 2020 list. Which is Wintermore Tactics Club, which I thought was very cute. I want to say someone else on the podcast maybe checked it out, but maybe like, did you play this? Am I misremembering that? No? Okay. It's about a school that is going to have all of its clubs cut except for one, and it's going to determine which one is left is like a number of snowball fights, snowball fights.
I remember I picked this up and I was going to play it for the pod, and then you played it before I did, and then I was like, well, I don't have to play it for work anymore.
Very cute, very, the thing is you represent the like tabletop role-playing game club. And so your version of these snowball fights becomes very imaginative and everyone has different classes. And it's very much like that style of like a Final Fantasy Tactics style game. I didn't get super far into it, but I put a few hours in and enjoyed my time. Well, the other tactics game that I played in May, but is actually from late April, is Troubleshooter. That South Korean game in which there are a billion mechanics and it is just a wacky, incredible game. I don't even want to try to give it justice in this 3-minute thing. Go back and listen to the Waypoint Radio in which I described this game for the first time. Because it is a game, it is a tactics game that like has a million systems layered on top of each other, some really cool world building, and a lot of style. That's called Troubleshooter Abandoned Children on Steam. Great, good name. Any other May stuff?
I think that's it.
I think that that's it from us in May. June.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Jet Lancer was May, wasn't it?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Wait, or was that just when I last played it?
Yeah, well, whatever. Go ahead and shout it out.
Yeah. Just a quick side, how do I explain this? Side scrolling kind of, like if you've played Luftrausers.
Luftrausers minus the Nazis.
Right. It's a very anime, very like stop in midair. Make a quick, like, sharp 180 degree turn and fire all your boosters in order to, like, avoid enemy bullets in the air. Like, it was really fun, really neat, really bright, kind of colorful anime aesthetic that was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
There's a good dog in there. You should find the good dog.
There is a good dog in that game. Yeah, Jet Lancer does have a good fucking dog. You're not wrong. No one, real quick, none of us played Minecraft Dungeons, and that game just sort of came and went, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people seem to like it, you know.
But it was very quickly clear that it was like Diablo for kids. Like, it was like a family game. Sure. It was like, it's like one of a million games I look at, and I'm like, all right, you know, when Jessica's five, that seems to be like when games turn on, if she gets into games, like, it's like that'll be the age. So it's like just not quite there.
It's funny.
Kato.
It's funny because it almost feels like it's simpler than Minecraft itself. Like, there's a lot of like the crafting system in Minecraft is fucking wild. But this ends up being kind of simplified too much for the audience that would love a Minecraft thing, you know? Strange, yeah.
Really quick, also in May, I just want to shout out Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition is a really good port of that game, of Xenoblade Chronicles. I didn't stick with it because there's just so much of it. And like I said, JRPGs rarely fit into my life, especially when they're that long. But that port seems great. I'm glad that that game is available. Figure out how to put Xenoblade Chronicles X on the Switch, please. Thank you. Bye. Valorant came out in June. Kato, are you allowed to talk about Valorant?
Yeah, it's on my list. It's not gonna be your number one. No, I don't think it'll ever hit.
I'm not even sure if it's on my list, but we played a lot of fucking Valorant.
Yeah, I think it's squeaking on because I'm still playing it. But that game is really fun. And their update's good. Like, they keep making changes that are keeping things fresh so far. The new maps, the new agents that keep coming out are really great. But for people who if you don't know what Valorant is, the like real quick and dirty is they added characters with abilities to a CS style tactics 5v5 competitive game. The way they did that was really clever and, expanded the idea of utility from CS style games, things like smoke grenades and flashbangs, those sorts of things, and kind of, you know, gave it flavor of like a character shooter and having individual characters have very specific type of utility, and like the balance around that was all really fun and interesting. And I've enjoyed my time with it a lot. It's one of the few competitive games that I've ever sunk this much time into since like I played TF2 on my Mac back in college because that was the only thing my Mac could play, right? Like those days. Really, really fun game, and it's free to play. So it's like one of those things where if you've ever been interested in like CS type shooters, this is a really good one to kind of lean into I feel like it has like the easiest kind of.
The thing I will say here is I would not have played this game if I did not have a group of people to pull from.
Right.
That first month of playing, we had a huge group of people from various like walks, you know, different friend groups playing together in different, you know, configurations. And that was when I was having the most fun.
It's absolutely.
I fell off of it eventually, but like you need to, for me, I cannot play that game with randos. I know Kata, you had a different experience with me than that, but like I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, go ahead.
The moment I fell off of this game was when I was trying to get together a team of people to play with me, and then someone else they wanted to play with more showed up, and they all played with that person instead. So it's just like there's a weird inherent toxicity to this game that is just think about a formal thing that I don't think I can really ever. So much of the gameplay was very fun when I actually got a chance to play it with friends. It's just, this is the cooperative versus competitive thing that we were talking about a couple episodes ago, rather than earlier this morning.
This is why I don't play many of these games myself, because, like, to a degree, there's the, I want to hang out with my friends, but also my friends want to win games. And I'm like, okay, so I'm probably not going to be super helpful with that part. Is that still cool? And it's like, yeah, no, we'll play unranked with you at Overwatch. Some point.
This is why Destiny.
Yeah. We'll do unranked.
Destiny is that exact game of like, you can be very chill in that game, or this is very
then you
like-
have to get into the raid game, and that's when you get ostracized by your buds.
No, the raids are great. Kato,
I'm sure the way you run raids is wholesome and good.
That's what I've supportive. Heard. And seen from the streams. Kato seems like a good raid leader.
I hope I am.
But I've never worked with him, so I can't speak from firsthand knowledge or anything.
I wish I could get this team into a fucking raid someday, but I know it's never going to happen.
On this call? I mean, Gita does it with you,
yes,
right?
Yes, this is what I mean. I just meant like this entire group.
Gita was very silent when I said, I'm sure Kato runs good raids that aren't toxic. And there was just dead silence on the mic.
Kato knows how I feel about him. I don't need to justify my love for Kato.
Wow.
That's right. Raven, precious leader.
Thank you.
Anyway, we should keep moving. Clubhouse Games 51 Worldwide Classics. Kato, I know you loved it.
Fucking love. It's just a bunch of board games with really good.
Oh, this again.
Yeah. It's good. Look, it's.
What is your fucking problem, Rob? What?
No, I love it. I love it.
51.
I love that Kato is like on this island of like games. Look. Just a big game collection, and Kato's on the beach.
There's a game.
Laying out his
games. Kato, Rob, what is your problem with Mancala? What is your problem with Hanafuda?
Those sound great. Those sound great.
What Hanafuda is, a game I would have never learned about had it not been for this, and it's very good tutorials. That's the real big thing about this thing, is that it has such a wide berth of games from all over the world and has very good tutorials for all of them. Like it really eases you into
How's that Mahjong tutorial? Is the Mahjong tutorial good? Because I know Matt people trying to get into Mahjong.
No, absolutely. Like I didn't ever think I could understand. Like I've like tangentially like kind of looked at Mahjong and been like, oh, that seems interesting. Like I kind of understand that the concept of like poker and things like that. I feel like I could get into it, but a lot of tutorials always end up leaning too hard into the like, this is how you win versus like, these are the mechanics, right? This is very much explains games from this is the mechanics. This is the baseline thing. And like, your first plays are not going to win in high level play, obviously, but this is the way you need to teach even like simple board games or card games of this nature, is like get those base like fundamentals are important, right? And it's just like nobody ever teaches the fundamentals of chess that way necessarily, or like fucking like Mahjong, things like what else is in there? I bet Hanafuda was
51
the one that
games.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucking games. And some of them are even, you can play them just like laying the Switch down on a table as a board game with the touch screen,
right.
Which is fucking great. It's just like a super solid, you know, really well executed collection of board games that I really enjoyed.
Anyone else have early June stuff?
I'll just
say, did you touch this Command & Conquer thing?
Yeah, a little bit, and it's very cool. The thing I'll say is, like, it took two games that in my memory have not aged well, and I would still argue there's reasons that I've sort of moved away from RTSs like this. It was kind of fun to go back and revisit them. Setting that aside, if you were trying to say like, what do I want from like archival quality game re-releases, this is probably it. This is about the most elegant and thoughtful way of doing it, preserving aesthetic, preserving original graphics, having it really, really work well. You know, I think they redid a lot of the sound as well, and like they gave it a remastered soundtrack. So like it really did show what a proper remastering probably looks like, short of remaking a game. And you know, I wish there were more people taking this approach rather than approaching a remaster as a chance to say, well, what if it was just a different game that was made 10 years later with different sensibilities? And that's like, I think for a lot of people with, you know, old favorites, that's not what they want. They just want the thing to run on modern systems and look right on modern displays and not be so clearly out of step with current AV standards that you keep getting pulled out of the experience in a way you never were back in the original context.
Makes sense. We got some big ones coming up, so let me quickly shout out a small one that's not on this list. Chaos Galaxy, a Romance of the Three Kingdoms style strategy game that came out on PC, but it's like space mechs, Legend of the Galactic Heroes style. SNES graphics, you know, in style. I love this game. This game is really good. And I cannot wait to put more hours. This is a game that runs on my laptop, and I'm going to be playing it over break while I'm at home, you know, when I have a few minutes here or there to play something. So that's a June thing. I think that we're, unless someone's played something between this and where it shows up, the next big thing here. I didn't, no.
It's wild how that kind of like came and went.
The response was pretty, pretty negative.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, good news, everybody. I fell off Persona 4 again.
Oh, you did.
I was like, I'm back in, baby. I'm going to finish it this time. And no, I will not watch read any game facts because I'm going to feel my way forward on it. And I began feeling my way forward. And then I realized I was in a minefield. And every time I went into the television, I was just getting my ass kicked. And I was like, this sucks. And like, sometimes I can just roll these mobs and then I'll just get a bad pull and I just fucking die and I lose all my XP and then the entire experience is a wash.
At least you know that you had an authentic Persona experience. You know, you can sleep well knowing that.
Is saying I'll come back to this and then never coming back to it, is that also an authentic Persona experience?
I just found Persona 3 for like 3 months one time because I had a one-hit KO that frustrated me so fucking much that I was just like, I can't even look at this. I put my PS Vita in a drawer. I was done.
I just discovered a thing I have to shout out because it's, I didn't realize that it was this early in the year. Horizon's Gate actually came out all the way back in March. That's a game that I was obsessed with around, I want to say I was playing that in May or June. If you want to hear me talk about an independent tactical RPG that, again, has kind of SNES-style graphics, you got a boat, you're exploring a world. I love this game. This game has so many cool things. Please go find when we talked about that on the podcast. I don't want to drag this down as the only person who's played this game, but I really, really like Horizon's Gate. It'll probably be on my top 10 list. Some really clever systemic interaction stuff in its designs.
Shit, you know what came out this year?
What's that?
Corruption 2099.
Yeah, that game exists.
2029. That game. 2029.
That's the Mutant Year Zero thing, right?
Yeah.
Mutant Year Zero, but
as good as.
You should go back and play Mutant Year Zero, Kato. That's my suggestion.
Game didn't have a duck.
I'm pretty sure that was December of last year.
Yeah, it was.
Corruption? Was that December?
It was.
I thought it was February.
Okay. Well, let me either way, from it.
No duck, no dice.
Yep, no duck, no dice. Kato was right. It's February. Last of Us Part 2, June.
I mean, there's like 13 hours of podcast audio. You want to go listen to my opinions laid out. I'm curious. Like, did anyone else like mess around with this game? You listen to me and Maddie Myers discuss all the ways we did not like this game. Patrick was there for about a third of that. We expected it to be the whole thing, but it didn't go well. Emmanuel was there for part of that. But yeah, I didn't like the game. I've had some distance from it. Still don't like the game.
Here's the thing. I keep wanting to explore it because I am interested in the ways that it is bad. Because when you and I have conversations, Rob, about media that we don't think is good or it fails in some way, I feel very like intellectually engaged. And I like to sometimes engage with media I don't think I'm going to like for that reason, to have engaging conversations. But I played maybe half an hour of the first Last of Us because I was like, well, it's not very long. I could probably get through it, you know, with David, who loves Last of Us. And I think like, we would have had a fun time experiencing, but I played like a half an hour of it. And I was like, I understand this game's worldview so totally. And it seems like 2 is so exactly the same worldview that I don't know if I want to actually do this. Like, that's time in my life that I literally cannot get back playing a game I don't like. Is a conversation going to be more stimulating than after playing the game than it is just listening to your very, very long podcast about why you didn't like it very much?
And the game is so long, too. It's not as though this is like something you could jump in and out of. Like, it's a bare minimum 25-hour commitment. It's a whole journey. I still have in my head that I still like the original game. I have my qualms with it. But I still really like the original Last of Us.
Yeah.
In some ways, the sequel like taints that, but I'm able to still separate those two out. I liked the act of playing The Last of Us Part 2 quite a bit, but the story still leaves a sour taste.
It's just the fact that no one can explain why that girl didn't get an abortion. You know, Ellie's girlfriend pregnant with her dead ex-boyfriend's baby. Seems like a perfect time to just...
Was that not the thing?
She's very young. She doesn't express any desire to have a baby. And you have to carry a child for 9 fucking months and give birth to it and then raise it.
I'm pretty sure the part where she expresses a desire for that is an optional thing that may not fire if you do not go to a particular corner of the section of the open world map. But there is a point, if you go exploring and don't stay strictly critical path, where she floats the idea to Ellie, like, boy, what would you think of, like, having a family on a farm, which is what they eventually get. And so if you hear that, it makes total sense that if she was already, like, if she was already carrying a kid, she might be like, well, this is, like, check, part one of my, you know, dream vision. That sounds great. And yes, even though it'll be inconvenient for the zombie fighting, someday I'm going to want this kid so that we can have a dog and a farm. And, but if you don't hear that line of dialogue, it starts to get a little weird because it's like, boy, we're really in hell here. And it seems like being pregnant for this is going to be tough.
Yeah, it's not just that. There's just so much media that deals with women having unexpected pregnancies. Bird Box is a similar one. And in Bird Box, it's like so much worse because that character actively does not want to have a child. And yet she's at this doctor. And the doctor's like, so you don't want to have this baby. Why are you keeping it? And she's like, well, I don't know. It just... Well,
there's always been this thing where media is still very uncomfortable with, like, media in general might be pro-choice, provided that choice is never exercised to, terminate a pregnancy. Yes. And this has been generally true, like, on television and movies, where it's like, you know, you have a choice, and then the character will almost always be like, but I'm going to have this child.
To keep it.
This media is going to promulgate some myths about motherhood and how once you see your child, everything will be made right and whole. I don't think Last of Us fully does that, but like there's so many, there's so much media out there where it's like,
it's more that it just takes it for granted as the default viewpoint, right?
It's there's a certain way that the first Last of Us is clearly drawing on prestige television, but in a way that I think is like more insightful about what to take from that and what kind of character arcs that people are drawn to. It's very much like in the Breaking Bad style of media, which, like, again, if you revisit that show now, it's like not, you can start to see like some of the flaws with that style of storytelling. But just like looking at The Last of Us 2, reading all these reviews of The Last of Us 2, it just feels like this is like a prestige television show that has not at all evolved from that style of storytelling, and then it's just replicating all of the things that are really annoying and boring about that style of storytelling. Anyway, I didn't even play this game, so.
Can I just shout out one thing real quick? Desperados 3 came out before Last of Us 2. Desperados 3.
You're totally right.
Cool game. I did eventually fall off of it because, like, it is so much I'm going to solve the puzzle of this level that eventually you just get a little tired of puzzle solving and, like, reloading when it doesn't go right. But still, a really cool, really intricate, like, stealth puzzler. I liked it quite a bit. Definitely one of those things where it's worth giving a look and seeing if you dig it.
The next thing here is Pokemon Cafe Mix Kado. It's cute. It's a cute puzzle game.
Yeah, it's a cute puzzle game.
Is there more to it than that?
Not much. It Pokemon does have like a kind of unique, like, I don't know, maybe it's just that I don't play a ton of mobile games, so I don't know that I'd really want to say this, but as far as I've seen, it has like a interesting, kind of very specifically touch-based mechanic, where you're like connecting lines, but when you connect these little icons, you string them along, and then that has physics to it, and you're kind of fighting with a bucket of these like little Pokemon icons and the physics of them kind of jumbling around in there to try to make connection, like long chains of the same type of Pokemon. So yeah, it's just got this like kind of interesting, neat little thing, and not much else to it. If you like Pokemon, it's very cute. The art style is adorable. I liked it a lot as a little puzzle game. A thing that I feel like I might have blacked out, and you mentioned it already. Did we talk about Lithium City?
We didn't. Lithium City rules.
Yeah.
Lithium City rules.
That was
isometric action cyberpunk game that came out. Each you're moving from room to room. Each room has a kind of a really cool gimmick. And that way, I often compare it to games like Titanfall 2 or the Mario games, in which you're like just excited to see what sort of ideas the developer will pull up next, where the same basic mechanics are being used in interesting ways. It's great, super stylish. I want more of it. I hope that developer makes some more stuff.
Yeah, it was super cool, super neat.
Also a thing we missed that I would be remiss. Have you heard this before? It's like Slay the Spire, but you're on a train. Monster Train came out in June, that came out in May, but I played it in June. People fucking love that game. I have a really hard time with the art style, but I think that the core design is fantastic. If you like Slay the Spire stuff, look at Monster Train. Another June one, Hard Space Shipbreaker came out in early access. That's a game where you cut up a bunch of giant spaceships for parts, and it rules. I'm waiting for there to be more of it. I put a bunch of time into it in just the early access. I think that moving around ships in 3D in zero G and cutting them up and having them blow up because you didn't do a good job and you should have, you know, scanned to make sure there weren't like active fuel tanks underneath your laser cutter or whatever, is a really fun experience. It's very meditative for me, despite the potential for giant explosions.
I also love all of the framing around like your insurance and shit when accidents go wrong, and like
labor exploitation.
Yeah, it's very good at that. Very funny.
Totally. Anything else in June here so people want to shout out? I think we're good. I think we can keep on hustling. We're sorry if we missed things. We are now just in hustle mode. So July starts with Automobilista 2. No, I don't think any of us, unless Rob, did you secretly play Automobilista
2? I didn't, but now I'm looking at it because I saw that and I was like, what's that? Uh-huh. Sounds Italian, and they can sometimes make good. There's like two good Italian racing
there's more sim food studios. For you later in this month, Rob. So
is it not Trackmania? The same day, it's not the same type of game. I don't know that Rob is a Trackmania person. Sorry to Trackmania, I guess.
Did anyone play Little Town Hero?
I paid to watch Rob be on a Jeff Gerstmann Trackmania stream.
Oh, my God. Oh, I would love that. That would be fantastic.
That'd be a good crossover.
No, I never played Little Town Hero. It reviewed so poorly that I skipped it everywhere that it was released.
Yeah. Rob and Gerstmann is like a Bert and Ernie combo.
It really is. Yeah. Let's make classic. Rob and let's make that happen if we can. Iron Man VR, Patrick, maybe? No? Nope. No? Okay.
The reviews were poor and it was
okay.
Gotta hook up that
VR. And he shattered his VR rig at that point. He was like, no other VR game will ever touch these eyeballs.
Yeah. just because I keep considering buying it and then not doing it. Super liminal, the word on the street was that. It was like just okay.
Was that what the word was? Is that what the word was?
I didn't hear a lot of super positive buzz. It's just like, it's a puzzle game.
That's a different game. Super positive is not. This is super liminal.
Super liminal. I watched some Let's Plays of it, and the forced perspective puzzle seemed very cool. But what I kept hearing from people, like from Chip Cheeseman and Voidbreaker, who have been playing it on their channel, was that it was trying really hard to tap into the kind of meta puzzle game tone of games like what's the one that started off as a Half-Life mod and then became its own
thing? Stanley Parable?
Yes, thank you. Stanley Parable. Right. Like Stanley Parable and other games that came out and were inspired by that game style of narration and sort of like arch storytelling. And it felt, they were saying it just didn't feel natural. It felt kind of weird and forced and unsatisfying. And I was like, well, okay.
Forced perspective. Getting forced.
I played that CrossCode port on Switch and didn't get deep into it because of how buggy and kind of bad the frame rate and some stuff there was. I was really hoping to finally play that game this year on Switch, and then the Switch port was bad, and so now I just haven't played it. I mean, that Switch port might be better now. I'm not sure. Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon 2 looked good from when I watched Vinny Caravella play it, but I've not played it. Patrick, you played some Deadly Premonition 2, right? It seemed like a mess.
Yeah.
In content and form.
Yeah. Obviously, there were, go back and do some Googling around the game's depiction of a central trans character and the reaction from Swery, the designer, was weird. It was like between that and a frame rate. You know, this game only came out on Switch, at least at the moment, in the open world where it was like literally in the single digits. And I'm not a frame rate person, but that was just, there were just all these like, I like started it, hit the bad frame rate. I was like, yeah, okay. I guess like this world is still kind of charming. And then like, you know, read all the good reporting from folks like Laura Kate Dale about the trans characterism, which is like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? Like, life's too short. Like, yeah. Like, you know, when we talk about, you know, we, you know, mentioned where you, you compromise, yep. you
draw your own lines media, in like certain
this world's worth it, yep. For that. Like, I'm getting something out of it. I just wasn't. I was like, I played that first one. Yeah. That first one on its own has its own
issues. Yeah.
But I found it, there was enough there that, I was on for the ride. And this one was just like, I'm good. Like, maybe I'll look at it again when I can like play it on PC, but probably not. I was like, I'm good. I don't need another adventure with these characters. It kind of seemed like it fell by the wayside pretty quickly and for good reason.
Yeah. I have to bounce soon, and so I'm going to quickly talk about the biggest thing this month that came out that I put a lot of time into, which was Ghost of Tsushima, which is a game that, like, I think it's a really pretty game, and I think that the combat is better than I thought it would be. But, like, it's such a boilerplate open world, you know, adventure.
It has struck a chord, man. That is, like, more than any other game this year. Yeah. I mean, I reviewed it okay. Yeah, like, but
an audience
people
really
liked it. But people have like really taken to that. And I think this, you know, we've, you know, when we were talking about my, you know, washer guy, I think there is something to, and I saw someone talk about this on Twitter. They're like, as a game critic, you play so many of the same things that you are by nature of the design of the job, desperate for not just novelty, but like new experiences. And it's easy to forget that for people who only play like one or two of these a year, they're just fine with like the existing.
With Cyberpunk this week a lot, because it's like, for a lot of people, this is a Fallout game and they haven't played a Fallout game since Fallout 4, which was 4 years ago. That is a thing that they want. And here is a new one. And maybe they
and
saw
it's
a
good
tweet.
One of those. Like, it is the apex of like this, what we all feel, you know, is an archaic way to design an open world. We're exhausted of it, but I'm not.
This is that with more conversational animations. And with ray tracing or whatever.
And good combat. Like, also, it's like...
Oh, Ghost of Tsushima. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, you're good. But yeah, Ghost of Tsushima specifically, actually, and to its credit, is doing an Assassin's Creed-style game that doesn't get made anymore. The new Assassin's Creed-style games feel distinct in a real way from, like, the Syndicate era. Though I guess Ghost is not as urban as that Syndicate era of Assassin's Creed game. But like, I think Ghost of Tsushima is like totally an acceptable one of those. I think that there's some really good character work in the first half of that game. The stuff with your buddy who is a Ronin, his arc is fantastic. I think that the acting around some of that stuff was all really good. I think that it's beautiful. Like, the use of color in that game is outstanding. People can go back and listen to the episodes in which I was a big nerd and upset with the way haiku was deployed in this game, with the ways in which the era in history was misrepresented, stuff like that. And like, those are stumbling blocks for me. And despite those, I did basically everything there is to do in this game. So to its credit, it fucking got me. It hooked me. You know what I mean? Like, a big hook, line, and sinker moment there for me. It probably won't make my top 10, but that's only because there were 10 other experiences this year that I think moved me more or were more fascinating to me. Not because I think that it didn't do exactly the thing it needed to do. You know, there is a type of fast casual dining experience that you would never list as your top 10 meal of the year, but you like had a good fucking meal, and there ain't nothing wrong with Applebee's ribs. They're not the best ribs you had this year. There ain't nothing wrong with those ribs. Sometimes you just want ribs and there's an Applebee's, you know, eating good in the neighborhood. Is that Applebee's?
That neighborhood is my stomach.
The neighborhood is my stomach. The ribs in it. Ghost of Tsushima, the Applebee's of 2020 video games. Put
Ghost
it on the box.
That's like that, that's smoking mids.
You know what?
It's all right.
Yeah, listen.
I'm not upset I'm here.
Right. Yeah. What I'm saying.
How'd I get here? Oh, this is fine.
This is fine. Your honor. anyway, There's a bunch of other stuff in June. In July. We're in July, right? We are in July.
July, yes.
I don't see what else.
Okay, so quick thing. I've not played it. I wrote it off because it looked totally terrible, but it apparently wasn't. I heard Rocket Arena was actually a really fun multiplayer game.
It's fine.
Okay, Austin.
I played. You know, that's not
fair. Applebee's.
I played it at E3 last year. It was fine then. Maybe it got good since then. It has one really cool hook, which is, what if instead of having just health bars, you had a Smash Brothers style meter that filled up, and then eventually you got knocked off the Rocket Arena out into fucking space when you died. That's a fun thing. Yeah. And in general, like the premise of it is very much like everyone has big AoE damage type weapons, and there's lots of little, you know, different multiplayer modes. Rob, you should check it out. You should know what it is, because for me, it's like, okay, yeah, it's kind of doing the thing it's trying to do, but I don't know that that was enough for me, especially in comparison to something like Valorant, which seemed like it was, doing a similar, like revisiting an old style of game that was popular once and putting our new spin on it. And not that CSGO is not super popular. Don't cancel me on that.
I'm already about to fall asleep, or did we not talk about Carrion yet?
We didn't talk about Carrion yet.
We're not there.
Carrion was later in the month. Yeah. Carrion, there's an alien.
Well, Carrion was dope. It's on the loose. With that game.
It's on the loose.
Loved Carrion.
Carrion.
Great music.
Yeah. I bought it. Never played one of those for me. Because it's just like, by the time all my friends were like, oh, it's got problems, I was like, let me move on to a different one then before I start Carrion. And then that ends up being all the games I play in this week of December.
That's, yeah.
Look, there's a reason that Ace Combat 7 is going to be one of my games of the year. Sometimes the conversation happens, you're like, oh, I'll put a pin in that. And you take that pin out a year later and you're like, oh shit, that's good. That's an Outback Steakhouse right there.
Okay,
that is a blooming onion.
I do like an Outback Steakhouse more than an Applebee's. You're not wrong.
Okay, can we add ratings to our reviews, but only in terms of Applebee's appetizers? Great.
Yes, absolutely.
Maybe this will bring back the views we lose by not assigning scores. It's like, can you believe they gave that a fucking White Castle? Can you believe that?
That was a blooming onion for sure.
I have a question, and this is all I want to know. Is Paper Mario the Origami King about Mario and Luigi working together to solve a serial killer case years later and coming to terms with their own fractured relationship and their inner demons that have driven them both to the margins of Mushroom Kingdom society and learning and reconciling themselves with each other by the end? Is that what that game's about?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird that the game was directed by Brian De Palma, but...
That's about right.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
No, but it does. The Origami King does have. This is a slight spoiler. Heads up, has a sequence in which they expand on the interiority of the existence of the Ba-Bomb, in which Ba-Bombs exist to find a reason to Ba-Bomb to explode, and there is a sequence in which a Ba-Bomb, who is a main character who is with you
for
a large chunk of the game,
you're shitting me.
There's a moment in which a boulder needs to be exploded order for the game to progress.
What?
And they sacrifice themselves, explode, die. Like, move on in whatever afterlife equivalent there is in the Mushroom Kingdom to allow the progression.
It's incredible.
I emailed Nintendo to be like, please, let me ask questions about this. Sure, we'll get right back to you.
Never. Seems like we finally found
video games Citizen Kane.
it's awesome. That's a really touching moment. It's fantastic. Like Origami King has a bunch of really fantastic things wrapped up in a package that I mostly didn't enjoy playing. It was a game where if they took out all the combat, I would have been like a happier player for it, which is too bad because there's a lot of it.
All right.
But it's a really, really cool world and really cool story.
I have to run. I don't know if y'all want to continue through July and the rest of the year. And I'll be back when I'm back. We made it through half the year.
You know, should we just end the podcast with sorry we only made it to July?
Yes. I want to tell you. Wait. Some things. We're getting into the part of the year where we remember more. We talked about this more recently.
Austin, you can drop out.
Bye.
You won't finish this bit.
We'll decide. We'll work this out. On live, on air. What the fuck are we doing?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Look, so
now that Austin's not here to talk about every single game he played that's exactly like Slay the Spire, except we could maybe get through some things a little bit faster.
Wow.
Damn. Sorry. Austin, I love you when you hear this podcast.
I do.
If we're gonna give ourselves like 10-15 minutes to get through the rest of the year, we need a format. Like, okay, we can do the rest of the year. We just gotta be.
We can only talk about a certain number of games per month.
Yes. Each of us look at a month.
Yep.
Pick the one game you want to talk about. If there's overlap, someone gets an extra pick to talk about a different game. But
that makes sense. So for
July, is there anything else we want to discuss? I have one game I want to discuss.
I have one.
Go.
All right. Go. Other Side. Real cool run-based tactics game. Astrid Johnson wrote a terrific review for us over at Waypoint, but it is a squad tactics game that takes place in this creepy like limbo space as the daughters of a fallen goddess who sacrificed herself to contain ancient evil do battle with the forces of darkness in this this limbo space that exists out of time with different mix and match aesthetics from different eras. And they're all goth girl. The entire thing, people describe it as like an Evanescence album given game form. And that's basically it.
I missed out on this one.
Yeah. So worth a look. Hard as hell. Here's the other catch. It is deterministic, like a bit like Into the Breach. If you know how enemies act and you understand the decisions they make, you can predict pretty perfectly what will happen based on your moves. Mm-hmm. So it is one of those games where you can, like, if you see the matrix, you can basically like plot out several moves ahead the entire engagement and it will work. But the game is complicated enough that it's really hard, and it's kind of fun being surprised by it. So dig it. People should give it a look.
Several moves ahead. That's your podcast, right?
Yeah, that's we're expanding formats. Some number of moves.
I have
Kato.
I was gonna say I have two, and I can't let them go. I'm sorry. They're gonna be super short though, because they're very small games. They're very small. I feel like they should get shoutouts because they're small.
Immediately breaks the format.
Look, okay, first up, Necrobarista. Great visual novel about the afterlife and spending time and the way that time and economy and money, the idea of like how you spend your time and also letting go and moving on in the afterlife. Great, you should check it out. It's got anime style. I really enjoyed it. The other one, Thousand Threads, about kind of conflicts within communities and physical distance being kind of like you like deliver mail in that game and like the way that distance affects conflict. It's really interesting. Go play that game. Sorry, that's it. I did two, so I did them quick.
Anyone else got any July games?
No, August time.
So. August. I have mine.
I have mine. It's at the end of August. I'll wait until the rest of everybody talk about that. I'm assuming that sounded like a coherent sentence. The rest of everybody did.
It did it. I think if we transcribed it, it would not. But I think we all got the gist. Here's mine. I'll just start.
Yeah. You go while I'm scrolling.
Yeah, well, you guys can figure it out. Total War Saga Troy. Very good old school Total War game. A lot of different, like the game has a very different feeling depending on which of the factions of the Trojan War you are choosing to play. It handles the themes of like Divinity and Destiny pretty cleverly. The other cool thing is that it unevenly distributes a lot of the game's key resources around the map, so that there are strategic sweet spots where like you will want to expand there, and that might mean opening an entirely different front in the war than the enemy in front of you. But in order to win the war, you're going to have to go secure these resources and pick fights with like six other people. And that is such a cool, like you open such a can of worms when you do that in a strategy game. And a lot of games don't force you into those kind of situations, but this one does. And it led to some of my favorite experiences. So I give that game a recommendation.
Nice.
That's very nice.
Sounds like everyone else is still trying
to
figure
it
out. I got
it.
Yeah. So I was trying to figure out. I had Blasphemous on my list in August. It was because the DLC came out in August, which is when I went back and played the base game. Blasphemous, game talked a lot about over the year. It's a really, I think there are a lot of games to try to be 2D Dark Souls, and I think Blasphemous is the far and away the best of them, mostly because it's not really trying to be 2D Dark Souls. It takes some elements. It's got bonfires and things like that, but it is really just a brutally hard Castlevania game with deep, you know, Symphony of the Night, sort of like Metroid style influences. And it just has one of the coolest aesthetics I've seen in a game this year. It is so much fun to play. It's really tight controls. The combat is fantastic. I didn't play the DLC because the DLC was like super hard bosses and you had to do a bunch of weird hoop jumping in the game, like grindy stuff to even unlock it. It got me to play the base game, and I it's tremendous, and it's great on Switch. So Blasphemous.
We love to hear it.
Kato, do you have it? Because Gita is at the end of the month, so do you have something that's not?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have it, do you? You don't.
I can go.
You're gonna let August go sailing by.
All right, we're gonna go. Wasteland 3. That game came out. I completely missed the hype for it, but Matt Galt wrote a little blog about how good it was, and I grabbed it, and it grabbed me immediately. I love that the CRPG shit. I just wish I had enough time in my life to actually finish games like this. You know? It's the Fallout game that I wanted, honestly. It is.
That's the stuff that it's like engaging with like apocalyptic right wing 80s visions.
Yes.
Seems really cool. I dig that.
I went to a museum for the leader where they've done like little animatronic song and dance routines explaining the history of the region. And I was just like, this is like the exact kind of satire of American culture that I want and desire at this moment. It's just, you know, those games are really long. You play it on your computer. My lower back hurts. I'm 31. It's very difficult for me to finish those games. But I wish to finish it sometime between now and like 2045. So,
speaking of finishing things, Kato, did you make a pick?
Yeah, I'm picking something from May that I forgot I played called Sludge Life. Sludge Life was a game where you went around kind of great.
Being sludge?
Kind of. it was this like a factory setting. It has this very great like 3D, it's hard to describe, 3D aesthetic where you're like low poly but not quite, a little smoother than low poly normally is, and you're going around tagging things, like you're doing graffiti all around this kind of weird factory and figuring out what is going on. There's like a worker strike going on, and it's very fun. And you should check it out. It's a small indie game that actually came out in May, and it's on the Epic Games Store, which is why I missed it, because I'm looking at my Steam library for this list. August was a weird like
September
time. Yeah,
August was a weird time. September, I know immediately what I'm going to talk about, and it's right there at the top. So I'll just say that I can't elaborate too much. It's on my list. So Rob, what do you think about Crusader Kings 3?
I'm a huge fan of Crusader Kings 3. I think it is, like, it makes accessible a lot of the things that have always been cool about Crusader Kings. I think the changes it makes to aesthetic presentation make it's always been sort of sold as a life sim type strategy game in a lot of ways. It turns out that creating, like, character models that have traits and, like, sort of mien, like makes a huge amount of difference for making that story feel believable. It's not just like seeing the box score from a life. It's like, these are people and they do stuff. Also it's a huge game. Like you could like log hundreds of hours. And I basically did playing in and around the British Isles. And just like, that could be the game. And then it's a different game if you're like, I'm going to start in a different part of the world. And mm-hmm. like the structures are different. The religions are different. The conflicts that arise are different. The events that pop up are different. Yeah, I think it is awesome. And I do have a question, but we'll talk about it when we discuss it. When you're discussing,
there are a couple of things that are keeping it back from me from being a total lock for Game of the Year. When one of them is just like other games that we'll talk about later, I absolutely just could keep going back to that well anytime I wanted and just get the same dopamine hit. Crusader Kings 3 has a problem of something like a Wasteland 3, where it's just like I know that it's so big that coming back to it is very intimidating, and I just feel like that sense of hesitation is, I think, the only thing that's keeping me, one of the only things keeping me from loving it more. I also, as time has gone on, I don't know, there's some weird, the way that the game deals with disability, I'm not sure I'm all about it. I don't know. I feel like that system could use a rework, or at least like a more public discussion to sort of understand what the issues really are.
So my game basically came out at the same time, Iron Harvest, the steampunk, dieselpunk, because there's a difference between aesthetics, the dieselpunk, RTS that's, about a not so disguised history of the wars between World War One and World War Two. It is a very Crusader Kings. It is a very Company of Heroes, style game. Company of Heroes is cool. And they created really compelling characters and a really like interesting arc for a lot of these different sides. I think if you someone who enjoys, like we talked about Warcraft 3 a little earlier in terms of that campaign doing a good job of showing how even some of the worst characters end up having genuinely like convincing reasons for why they might go bad or why they might make decisions that put them on a bad path. I think Iron Harvest does that as well. And it does that in a way that resonates with a lot of what we know about like political history. So I think people should give it a look, especially if you liked old RTS campaigns. This is probably the best RTS campaign we've seen at least since Homeworld Deserts of Crack. So that's me.
Okay, I'm going to just say that Hades is on this list.
Yeah, I guess I can't really allow. That was the other thing I was alluding to. The other thing came that came out that I could just return to and return to and return to.
Nothing needs to be said about Hades. We'll just punt that one to the end. And the thing I'll say is I look at this list and I look at 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim?
Yeah.
Anyway, 13 Sentinels, which will be I just look at that game and I go, "What's up, Patrick Klupik's like 2021 game of the year?" play, you know, from 2020. Yeah. Like, I just know I'm going to end up playing that game like in January and I'm like, "Ah, shit."
Yeah. Right.
Well, that sucks. This game
rules. Bought it preemptively to be sad that I didn't put it on my 2020 list, essentially. So it was like, I bought it. I'm like, when the fuck am I going to get to play this before the end of the year? Shit.
I'm very excited to play more of it. I played like an hour, but it seems extremely good.
Kato.
Can't do two again?
Genshin Impact came out this month.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that Genshin Impact and Star Renegades both came out that month. And I really enjoyed both of those games.
He still did too.
You can go listen to me talk about Star Renegades on Three Moves Ahead. I guessed it on that episode. It was fun. I'm still playing Genshin Impact basically every day because it has a really, really neat, really fun like combat system that is really easy to engage with when you're doing like the kind of daily bounties. So
do you actually play it on your phone?
Yes.
Like when you're just doing like the rote stuff, it's just like
It has crossplay with PC. So like I do story stuff on the computer when I have a little bit more time. But like every night, like it's become my like before bed game. I just like sit down, do my dailies, which takes like 20 minutes of like, you know, it's a combat, like four different little combat.
And you're doing it with just like obnoxious, like screen buttons and whatever.
Honestly, like it's they've done a good job. It's, I mean, it's still touch controls. And like, I guess if you wanted to, you can like Bluetooth controller to most phones nowadays, but I just don't.
Yeah, it supports like basically everything.
I don't even bother. Most of the like gameplay actually kind of ends up working out better because you're kind of swapping between characters, and you can fast swap a little easier by tapping on like the characters that you're using, and then using that ability by hitting the ability button. So it's actually it works out for the style of kind of gameplay. But yeah, sorry, I did. Two, I played a lot of games. I'm sorry.
Oh, God, I'll never apologize. All right,
October.
Wait, how are we...
Start.
Did you not...
What?
Spelunky 2?
That was it. He didn't pick it.
Didn't play it. Really not that interested in playing it. Moving on.
Damn.
Wow.
All right, I got mine for October. You can
refer... Spelunky 2, refer to...
here's my October. Yeah, that doesn't work.
Pleasant little cat. I don't know. I love this.
That was I was trying to be a TIE fighter.
Yeah, I know. I got you. This is the only other Star Wars sound I can make.
Yeah.
You gotta do the sound effects to Kato. He's our soundboard.
So see, Kato, I think you and I are both cats in heat is the problem.
Yeah.
I think we both ended up in the alley.
Right.
Like outside someone's apartment.
I'm sure that's part of that sample. And they're being like,
shut the fuck up. Anyway. Star Wars Squadrons. That game was fun. Like, I think I haven't played it in a bit because I began to find some dynamics were getting real old real fast. Like, increasingly.
They got a big update today, or they announced an
the B-Wing
thing?
There
was, got an email about
yeah, there's they yeah. added some new ships, too, which is, like, got me looking at, like, oh, I think I have to go back and see how this affects the balance. Major release 4.0. Happened today, today. Free content update where they added two new like ships that are that play differently. Shit, I have to go back.
I started to get a little bit frustrated by how many builds seemed really powerful. Like, Cat Bailey would talk a lot about this, where like the TIE bomber seemed pretty broken, and I'm not sure I would have ever as gone as far as she did. But I do kind of agree, like, it was really kind of messed up that in a dogfighting game, one of the most powerful ways to play was to basically take a bomber, a notoriously, like, immobile style craft, and turn it effectively into a giant fucking turret that nobody could kill. and
I feel like the bomber actually was more effective in the objective style one, where you're destroying capital ships than in the actual dogfight where it's just dogfights. Where it's just dogfights, I found a lot of success using the really quick ships, and like that was like fun as hell, being able to like fucking space drift in an A-wing. It's cool as shit.
I agree, but also I saw a lot of people just wrecking house of bombers in dogfights, and then I tried it out and I was like, oh, you can just kind of like in some maps, like basically, on maps where there were clear line of sight, there are a lot of tools that make it so you don't have to aim for shit. And if somebody just can't get out of your range fast enough, they're probably pretty screwed. And the bomber has a lot of tools that allow them to basically just post up and just like slowly just DPS somebody to death from a distance, and bring them down. And so that did start to get a little bit old. I wish maybe another. I wish it had more than two modes in some ways. Like, I wish there were battles that didn't feel the same in terms of fleet combat. But that being said, me likey the Star Wars dogfights. That's like, oh, I'm in an X-Wing? Okay, this game is already, like, it's automatically good. Sorry.
I feel not like your enthusiasm summoned the Lucasfilm, the new Rogue Squadron film into the world, Rob.
Yeah.
I mean, and they go that extra, like, the just enough more complicated with, like, the shifting power to different systems to make that feel really, like, fucking neat where, like, you know, shit, I fucked up, my shields are gone, I need to toss everything into boost so that I can immediately hit my fastest.
They understand.
You know?
They understand that people want to be flipping switches furiously.
Yeah.
And they understand that people want to be like slamming the throttle to the stops to get it. Like, that's the best feeling. Yeah.
I love it.
That's Squadrons.
The new B-Wing is like a heavy fighter for the Republic side, which I think I'm was into missing. That.
Let's do it.
I have to,
my pick from October is Cook Serve Delicious 3. That game.
Ooh.
Kind of, I don't remember what I was doing, but I do remember lamenting that I was doing too much other shit to sit down and write about the really weird lore of Cook Serve Delicious 3, which takes place in a post-apocalyptic world where you drive a food truck across a collapsed United States, where every state has a different weird currency because there's no longer any overarching government, and you serve food to the people. I just think that that's neat.
It's like The Postman starring Guy Fieri.
Yeah. It's got a lot of cool new like food service like features and shit too. Like it's got this thing where you can add stuff that people can pick up and grab to go. So on your ride over to the next place where you're going to stop, you can be cooking all of those things. And then it'll make it easier to take orders because everybody that wants to grab your like pre-made churros in a little clamshell case can grab those and pay for them. And it's the only thing is that the games in the series Cook Serve Delicious just make me very, very stressed out because you have to. It's so much like food service. It's like almost exactly like food service. So I'm just sitting there like, while I'm playing. That's all I have to say.
Kata, did you have one for October?
I have two. One of them, though, I can't talk about. Tenderfoot Tactics. Okay. Expecting some sort of discussion at some point. The other one was Ghost Runner, which I really enjoyed. This is
God. I need to get that. You need to. I've had it installed.
I played like an hour of it, and I could feel it, Kato. I could feel it underneath my skin.
Yeah, I've been waiting. Yeah, exactly. I've been waiting. I played like two or three, and just got distracted. But I'm definitely going to revisit it. Just really fucking amazing. First person platforming action game where it's really about finding the like the way that you talk about like finding the line on a racetrack, like right, like the like perfect path through an area, and you know that's a combination of wall running and jumping, but also using the slight amount of magnetism you get from attacking enemies to like make the last like inch with a little dash and figuring out what order to take out enemies and all sorts of great different like wrinkles to that with a backdrop of the cyberpunk dystopia where all of humanity lives in one tower and you're basically making your way up the center of it, and you're kind of being pulled in different directions by an AI that you're unsure of its origins, and a resistance fighter that's trying to take out the corporation that's currently killing the lower levels. It's super cool shit. Definitely check it out if you feel like Mirror's Edge got a short shrift, because I feel like it's better Mirror's Edge in a lot of ways.
Patrick,
I want to shout out Leisure Suit Larry Wet Dreams.
Patrick
twice hasn't gotten a lot of discussion on the podcast this year, but Disc Room, a game. It's on Switch and PC. A game where you I don't know, it's like some scientists go to a fucking weird planet that shows up or something, and there's these spinning discs and they kill you. And it's a really good puzzle game. I played like 2 hours of it pre-release and then hit a bug that they fixed, and I need to go back and finish it, but it is it's really fucking good. It feels like it kind of just came and went, and so I'll take my moment to tell people to check out Disc Room.
Hell yeah. What's the next month of the year? November. Oh my God, the November. Also, part of this page is so long.
November to remember, right? That's how the commercial goes.
Oh boy. No, the commercials now, what they go is, in a year unlike any other.
There's never been a better time to buy a car for those places you're going, to see those people you're going to see.
Lexus.
Oh, I know what I'm talking about from this one.
What was I gonna say? Shit, I lost it. Watch Dogs Legion came out. That's it. That was in October.
It did. Well done.
Yep.
Yeah.
That happened.
That was just the whole thing.
Okay, so we're in the part of the year where I was like, I should play these things later, but I'm busy.
I've got mine. I've got mine. Gita, do you want to go?
Yeah. Fuser, baby. Fuser, the DJ game.
Okay.
My good friend Nathan E. Smith wrote the review for us. He is a DJ and he's really great taste in music. And what I just loved about this game was just I love music. It has a lot of incredible licensed music, like licensed songs that I know and deeply enjoy. And I feel like it deepened my understanding of music and my love of music, which is just like, isn't that just a delight? Isn't that just wonderful when you play, engage with a piece of media that makes you love culture even more? I'm Gita.
I mean, like, oh. I need to play that game because, like, Nathan's write-up sounded fucking awesome. The thing I couldn't believe was sick. That I figured it was going to be like DJ Hero Redo, where it's like, no. Okay, you kind of like, you sort of like, oh, look at me, I'm DJing, hit button, switch tracks, you know, oh, look at me, crossfade, got it. And it sounds like, no, you're doing like production of like new sounds, new mixes, and that just sounded incredible.
Yeah,
and they want you to feel as much like you are at a like DJing for people as possible, which is a very clever and smart thing for them to do.
Yeah, DJ Hero definitely felt like they were attempting to make a game about DJ music, but using the mechanics that they have already figured out before, right? Where this is very much they figured out a game about DJ mechanics.
Nathan's review was very funny.
Right.
Nathan's review was very funny because it kept being like, look, all love to DJ Hero. DJ Hero was fun. I'm not saying it's bad because it did these things, but here are the things that weren't right that Fuser gets right.
Right.
And so it does kind of turn into Fuser being, I think, the game a lot of people wanted DJ Hero to be.
Yeah.
Patrick.
My game is Astro's Playroom. It's the pack-in for the PS5. So if you get a PS5, you don't gotta pay anything for Astro's Playroom. But having played like lots of PlayStation 5 games in the month and a half since we first got those machines, there's just nothing that better demonstrates like some of the cool technology in the PS5 DualSense. It's also just a tremendous amount of fun to play. I think you could strip out the funky controller technology, and Astro's Playroom is just a delight to run around in, and it's a good platformer. It's a fun world. It's just really, really good. And as someone that really championed the developer's VR game that nobody played, it's been exciting to have everyone else like, oh yeah, like this studio is really fucking talented. It's like Sony's internal Nintendo, and hopefully they're going to get unleashed on more stuff in the future. But it was cool to see that kind of get a wider audience with Astro's Playroom. I believe in my review of Astro's Playroom, I mentioned at some point that I believed the blessing and curse of Astro's Playroom will probably be that in 5 years we'll look back as the best use of the controller. And I we're only a month and a half in or whatever. So like, good. I still feel that's probably going to be true.
I think
this is the 1-2 switch of this console generation, basically just showing off a bunch of shit you'll never see in another game ever again.
One other game has used it so far, and I think is that this month? Bugsnax.
I don't think so. Oh.
Yeah. One thing I will say to help explain that, and Bugsnax does not use it particularly well. One thing I'll say to defense of other developers who have made on PS5 is that like Astro's Playroom was made both for players and developers to be a demonstration of like how the controller works.
Yeah.
And that game was not playable on dev kits pre-release. And like, I think that only recently changed. And so there wasn't a lot of documentation on like, here's how to use the DualSense. And so a lot of developers were flying blind. And so now that Astro's Playroom is out, it's essentially like, oh, here's an SDK in a video game form of like how to do this. So there's, I'm a little more optimistic now that, maybe games in the spring will have a chance to use that a little bit better.
I think Spider-Man also did it. Okay.
Yeah.
It felt good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Kata, do you pick one?
Yeah. So like, I'm a big Bungie fan. So when the Master Chief Collection came to Xbox Series X, I was all about that. It's Destiny, obviously. This is the month that Destiny came out. Fucking Beyond Light.
I was seriously 10. Not sure. I was like, did he get in the Halo Master Chief Collection?
Rob, am I missing something? Whose bit is this?
No, did he just come out in November for the Xbox X? But no, yeah. Destiny Beyond Light, the best that Destiny's ever been. Still fucking frustrated with some of the parts of that game, but goddamn it, do I love it. I've played too many hours of it to say otherwise at this point. It was a great kind of confluence of a couple of different design decisions of like, we're cutting out a lot of stuff so that we can kind of fix the code base that's here. And like playing that game, you kind of see the way that things work and flow better than before. Did that game a lot of good. And then also a new introduction of like better on-ramp, like actual on-ramp for new players in like tutorial quests in a starting zone, in a starting area. But then also the expansion itself, the like new mechanics that they've introduced with new supers and the new area, the new planet that they introduced, Europa, is all just like, I've been having the greatest like time since Forsaken came out 2 years ago with Destiny. And it's like one of those things where they've upped their game as far as storytelling and like the type of stories that the like core Destiny player base wants, but it like falls just short of being like a really like, I can't like laud it 100% on where that story goes. But it's like a step in the right direction as always, which is like, I feel like the thing I say every fucking time a new Destiny expansion comes out. But yeah, it's going to be on my list. It's not top because of those qualms I have with kind of it's Destiny, right? It's never going to be ideal, I feel like, but they keep inching towards greatness.
Cool. December it is.
I know mine already.
Do
I'm
it.
Opening the floor. Shoot. Any volunteers?
Wait, are you so yours isn't an early month game?
Yes, it is. It's okay, not on so this yeah. list though. Per Aspera, which you just turned me on to.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We talked about this recently on the pod, so I'll just keep it brief. But like, the more I think about it, the more I feel like this is a game that I find very necessary right now. It's very much a game that takes it doesn't look at outer space and the signs of outer space and of going to outer space as something that is abstract and not connected to the issues that we currently experience on Earth. It takes a very direct look at the things that we are dealing with on Earth, why that would lead us to go out into space, and how that can complicate our own ability to expand into new worlds, and the issues with even using those terms. And I just feel like if you are interested in thinking about those things, you will not be disappointed by this game. I can't wait to play more. I'm Gita.
Oh, yeah.
Kato, do you have two this time, or are you still figuring it out?
No, December is like short. I don't even remember. And
it's not even done.
It's the current month. So, yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't have anything because, like, for me, yeah, the only thing I played this month was Cyberpunk, and right. I'm not even considering that for like how my end of the year list because, like, I don't know. It's like it's coming in at the buzzer hot, and I need like a fucking minute to think about it, and I do not have that minute before I have to lock this list down. So, talk to me in a year about how I actually feel about that game in the end.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list, and I don't have anything from. That's like actually on this list, except to shout out again, Pathless, which I really, truly enjoyed and loved. And that was the game I basically played in the first part of December. And Pathless still rules. So Pathless, good.
You know what else is good and wasn't in December, but was in September. So I'm using my slot for that instead.
That's fine.
Phasmophobia.
I'm going to let it slide, Rob.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's a good, you know, somebody should have said it.
You know?
Finally, someone said it. That very popular game is yeah, good. Kato, yeah, breaking
obvious. It's obvious.
Barriers whatever. On this podcast. That is, I'm
Why
so
would
sad
you say something so controversial, yet so brave?
So God damn it.
I really enjoyed the couple of times I was able to play that game back when it came out. It's a really neat, Ghost Hunters. Have you ever seen any like Ghost Hunters TV shows? It is that. But being actually in the shoes of those people and having things actually happen to you is fucking terrifying, let me tell you. But it's fun because you play with friends, right? Like, it's a cooperative game. You can play it solo, a few levels solo, but it is mostly meant to be played as with four people. So you start to get into different roles of, like, who's doing what, and you're always kind of talking to each other over walkie-talkie. The great thing that this game does that was really interesting was that it uses voice recognition. Like, you're supposed to use the in-game voice chat to talk to each other, and so the further you get away from other people, like, you have to start using a walkie-talkie, and it like filters it through the walkie-talkie, Or you could like yell down the hallway and you'll hear your voice, your friend's voice echo from far away. And it's very spooky and creepy. But also, because you're hunting for ghosts, ghosts will oftentimes react to you saying their name and to you talking to them and saying certain things. It was just a really neat use of voice recognition in that way. And super spooky if you like horror and have a few friends you can convince to play with. It's really worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm so mad I have not played this game. Well, I feel like even if I had played a couple of rounds, there's like a
we need to play this game at some point.
Games of the year.
Just like the four of us. Why don't we just grab it at some point and just do it?
Seriously. Chris Person does Highlight Reel on YouTube and on Patreon. He talked up this game so much, like 2 days before I saw it, like really cross over and like break out with people. It just seems like such a fun way to, it seems like the only way I can play a horror game, which is with someone else on the call with me, assuring me that it's okay to be scared.
Yeah. There's even a built-in role for if you want to like be nice to one person on your team, you can stay in the truck and monitor things like the activity level, look through cameras, and like not be actually in the house, which is a very nice kind
of thing. And the truck never gets fucked with. There's never a surprise. The monster's in the truck.
No, exactly. The person in the truck is running support and they're always safe. So like, you know, there's at least the chance for one person or even two if you want to be a little bit shifted to like stay in the truck and have a kind of more removed experience but still have fun listening to their friends scream their fucking heads off as they get spooked by shit.
That's the year.
Wow.
That's 2020.
Yes. A year unlike any other.
Fucking Ghost Runner came out for the Switch this week? What? That seems wild.
No, a couple weeks back, and I looked up some gameplay footage, and
no,
I requested a code to be like, oh, maybe that'll be like the way that I sneak it in, like with more playing time. And I was like, I looked at like a comparison thing on YouTube, and I was
like real cyberpunk vibes of like, yep, it's running on this system.
Yeah, well, it's like even as someone that's not like a frame rate guy, like man, this game would seem not great at 30. Seems like you really want to play at 60, and it was like it was 30 on Switch. And I also just don't like the analog sticks on the Switch much. Like they're fine, like they work, but this game is so twitchy that you really want to have a controller that you feel really comfortable with, and I don't. Switch is not that.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway, Rob, I think you have to do the outro.
Yeah, I should pull that up. Well, anyway, that will do it for today's episode of our podcast holiday extravaganza. Hope you enjoyed the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. Gita, where can people follow you?
At XOXO Gossip Gita.
Patrick.
At Patrick Clubbing.
Kato.
At @A_Kato_appears.
You had to think about it again, didn't you?
I mean, you know. Yeah,
you did. Austin is at Austin_Walker. Our holiday theme music is by Tumelo. We'll be back very soon with, God, is it the Sorkin cast that we're doing next?
Oh my God, is it the Sorkin cast? It is the Sorkin cast.
Yeah, so the next time you hear us, we're going to be on our bullshit as we discuss the interesting autumn that Aaron Sorkin had as he heat checked himself yet again.
That's my favorite song from Night in the Woods.
So we're going to be discussing the West Wing, When We All Vote HBO special, and the trial of the Chicago 7. So stick around for that. It will be a lot of fun for those of us who are weird nerds about digging into the works of Aaron Sorkin.
And for those which I assume is all want of to you. Hear Rob and Giza turn into the Joker in real time.
Yeah.
The Joker-fied cast.
But until then, you know, fuck capitalism. Enjoy your holidays.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I'm not going. Hey, you know what? That Bumblebee movie rules.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
The one with the... Who was that?
Yeah, Haley.
Seinfeld?
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 The B movie.
What's the deal? Yeah, the B movie with Seinfeld.
That's what we're talking charming. About,
it's,
right?
It's an excellent movie.
Yeah. All right, yeah, ready? Recording, time dot is. We get a clap?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, clap.
Let's do 3 seconds.
Wait, what? I was...
What? 3 seconds, you said.
Yeah. What?
You wanted us what? To count? No, we're starting over.
No, okay. At 3 seconds. At okay. 3 seconds.
But I think Rob counted 3 seconds.
No, I didn't. No. I never clapped because when you guys clapped, it was like at zero.
Yeah, same.
Oh.
Yeah.
Time. My time dot is, I just refreshed and it was... It. I left it open from before and it got out of sync. It just jumped wow. back 6 seconds.
Okay, because I thought Austin was like adding a new wrinkle to the game. Was like
no. I'm 3 seconds to go. All right, from so right let's, now. Let's go again. Let's take it 35.
Yeah, that seems right.
I was in that for doing right. math. I was like, all right, so 3 seconds. No. That's 58.
I'm not in for doing math.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
All right, ready?
Oh, I hate math.